KALW.
From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Bay Hunters Point.
Hayward.
Piedmont, California.
Pleasanton.
Fall Town.
Coming up, the superintendent of Oakland School District left earlier this year, leaving many questions about a special education plan.
The lack of stability and leadership, it's exhausting when there's not someone who is firmly planted that absolutely affects our students.
Then we'll visit the StoryCorps booth to hear about a reunion between mother and child.
The top of my head blew off, thinking, oh my God, it's my daughter.
And we'll hear the story behind this week's Audiograph Mystery Sound.
That which makes harmony in the cosmos above.
This unique situation where peoples of different faiths will worship side by side.
Finding harmony, coming up on Cross Currents. Last year, Oakland Unified School District Superintendent Antoine Wilson proposed a new teaching approach for special education students. It's called an inclusion model, and it means students with special needs take classes side by side with general education students, and they'll get additional in-class support. But earlier this year, Superintendent Wilson left for a job in Washington, D.C., and the special education department has been in flux. Some parents and teachers worry the district doesn't have the resources or the leadership to make inclusion work for everyone. KALW's Sarah Tan reports.
Come on, babe. You're not making the right noise. I don't hear any water running. I just want you to be ready to go to school.
Mornings are tough for a lot of moms, and that's definitely true for Ensombi Hassan. She's trying to get her fifth grader, Jared, ready for school.
And you could have been ready a long time ago. Shall I come in there and watch you?
No.
Jared was born drug addicted, and Ensombi became his foster mom when he was 2 days old. Since then, he's been diagnosed with ADHD and a speech delay.
Jared has his own world. And he wakes up in his own world. But every morning for 2.5 hours before he gets to school, I have to get him ready to get into their world.
So you'd think being in an inclusion class at Carl B. Monk Elementary would help. But Mom Ensombi says Jared struggles with math and frequent bullying. The school wouldn't comment on his case or let me on campus. But his mom says even though Jared's in an inclusion class, he and other special education students are being left out.
They're always separated. You'll always see a table in the back or a table up front. If you walk into the classroom and see a table, then you know that's where the special needs students sit.
Inclusion is not a new concept. In the U.S., schools first made attempts at inclusion in the early 1960s. One school in Oakland adopted inclusion strategies a decade ago. But school board president James Harris says too many special needs students had been in separate classes, not interacting much with their general ed peers.
So I think we're headed in the right direction, and that direction is inclusion and allowing access to special education students to excel at the level that meets the needs that they have both immediately and in their long-term educational career. And we just hadn't been doing that as a practice, as a district, across the board.
The few inclusion programs that were in schools were in more affluent neighborhoods. Harris says former Superintendent Antoine Wilson wanted inclusion in every Oakland school.
We have to get in Oakland, you know, a through line in the services we provide.
Markham Elementary in East Oakland started piloting inclusion classes with its third, fourth, and fifth graders this past September. Each general ed class folds in a handful of mild or moderate special needs students.
Okay, and then number four?
Just draw short phrases and sentences.
Or sometimes you could just...
Like in this fifth grade class, co-taught by general ed teacher Renee Gillespie and special ed teacher Christelle Grace. Today, they're talking about note-taking, using Amelia Earhart's Flights Around the World as an example.
Sometimes you could just
make a list,
which is sort of like bullets to
the Now I have a question for you guys. She talks about the different ways you take notes. Do you have to use all of these?
No.
Grace and Gillespie instruct the whole class together, then break students into two groups for more personalized instruction.
No, it's not finished. It's a comma.
To South America. And then across the Atlantic Ocean to Africa.
Okay. Christian?
They continue over the
Sierra
Desert and on the...
Grace says she's seen the positive aspects of inclusion.
They're able to teach each other, to respond to each other. It's give them compassion, understanding, to realize that, oh, I didn't do my homework today, but you know what? He didn't do his homework neither, but he's trying. Let me try.
This is just one version of how inclusion can be done. At other schools, classes have one or two teachers plus individual aides for special ed students. 15 schools received professional development this school year, and the district says inclusion's happening at all of them. But teachers like Sayuri Sakamoto at Bret Hart Middle School say there are problems with implementation. Like in one class?
43% of this particular class was special ed students. And so are the students, you know, succeeding in their classes? Yes. But could we have done things differently and better? Yes.
Oakland International High School teacher Natalia Stark says numbers like that distort the idea behind inclusion.
That changes the dynamic of the cohort in a way that is very difficult to manage. As time goes on, if more and more students qualify, then it becomes more difficult to have like heterogeneous grouping in the classes, to have students with a variety of skill levels.
Sayuri Sakamoto also says it's difficult having the superintendent who championed inclusion leave while it's being piloted.
Because if there is nobody leading us and providing this continuity and these supports, then teachers do quit, teachers don't stay, teachers do feel overwhelmed.
And students often pay the price.
The lack of stability and leadership, I mean, it's exhausting mentally. And so when there's not someone who is firmly planted and firmly rooted, and that absolutely affects our students and their learning.
One of the district's biggest partners, Teach for America, is watching how inclusion will roll out. For the last 20 years, Teach for America has filled about a third of the special education vacancies. Now, Director Tracy Session says they're hitting the pause button, not assigning any new special education teachers until the inclusion plan is more clear.
We think it's a great idea. We believe that that should be our aspiration. And at the same time, our teachers were telling us that they had questions around what it will look like in implementation.
Session says he knows Teach for America's absence will make an impact on special education staffing, but they decided this was best in the long run.
That we actually need to make sure that we get it right, because it's what our students deserve, it's what our families deserve, it's what our teachers deserve, quite frankly.
Board member James Harris says one of the barriers to achieving full inclusion is the price tag. He estimates the most ideal model would cost about $10 million. But the district is in a budget deficit. The special education department has run $7 million over budget in the past 2 years. And Harris isn't sure where that kind of money would come from.
We're trying to do this with a lot less money than they're trying to do it with in New Jersey, New York. And it's incredibly difficult.
He proposes cutting costs by moving services like speech therapy and testing into the district's special education department and away from private contractors. Nina Bawa, OUSD's director of schools for special education, says the district needs to better utilize teachers and resources that they already have.
We work with schools individually to look at what their current staffing allocation is, what the needs of the students are, and then develop a model around that. What is it going to look like in terms of needing extra support, or are we going to be able to utilize the current staff to support the needs of the students?
Lisa Raisler has a daughter named Cleo with Down syndrome. Cleo's now a junior at Oakland Tech and has been in inclusion since kindergarten.
Cleo has really thrived being in a diverse group of kids in a really fully part of the community in general ed, and it's been in many ways a very, very good experience.
But Raisler thinks full implementation of inclusion will need more money than the district has. She speculates that the push for inclusion could be a way to trim the special education budget.
I think that in some way there's an idea in the district that universalizing inclusion will be cheaper. And I think that it is not necessarily cheaper at all, that there are a lot of attending services that need to be provided in order for inclusion to be a really successful model.
Teacher Natalia Stark is also skeptical of the district's funding plan. She says proper inclusion will require more staff to support and train special education teachers and more collaboration time.
One of the major barriers is that in order to have a successful and well-run inclusion program, it will actually cost a lot more money.
The district plans to pilot inclusion at 15 new schools in the coming year with an end goal of offering inclusion services in every school within the next 2 years. Meanwhile, Jared, who we met at the beginning of this story, is still struggling to get through a school day. But he's found refuge in a class outside his school in an African drumming class.
Did you say hi to everybody?
Hi.
His mother, Ensombi Hassan, says the class helps focus him.
He drums twice a week. On the weekends, he has classes, which I think has gotten him over the hump.
She just wishes he could have focus at school so he can eventually graduate and go to college.
I'm worried about Jared keeping up.
In the next few months, Jared will move on to middle school with a new schedule, different rules, and different requirements. His mom doesn't even know if his new school will have inclusion classes. It's a time of great change for Jared and the district too. For Cross Currents, I'm Sarah Tan.
You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. And now it's time for StoryCorps. Lamar Van Dyke, Paula Lewis, and Tracy Lewis have a special bond. Lamar is a lesbian who gave birth to Tracy when she was 18 years old. Unprepared to have a baby, she gave Tracy up for adoption. The person who adopted her is Paula Lewis. Grown daughter Tracy sat down with her biological mom, Lamar, and her adopted mom, Paula, inside the StoryCorps booth at the San Francisco Public Library to talk about their family.
I'm Lamar Van Dyke, and I'm here with my daughter, Tracy Lewis, and her fabulous adopted mom, Paula.
My name is Paula Marie Lewis. I'm with my daughter, Tracy Lewis, and her bio mother, Lamar Van Dyke.
I'm Tracy Lewis, and I'm the biological daughter of Lamar and the adopted daughter of Paula.
Over the years of my life, how did you cope with... Did you think about, well, she's 10 now, I hope she's happy, is she safe, does she have a good life? Did those thoughts, what were your hopes and fears for me?
Oh yeah, when I was still living in San Francisco, whenever I would see anybody walking down the street with a little black girl that was about the age of you, I'd think, wonder if that's her. Mm-hmm. Wonder if that's her. Mm-hmm. And then when you turned 18, I registered my name with an adoption finding agency because I thought, well, you know, I don't really feel like I have the right to go looking for you, but if you're looking for me, I'd like to make myself available for that.
Mm-hmm. How did you feel when, out of the clear blue, I contacted you 21 years ago?
Oh, I had a heart attack. I had a heart attack. I always knew that we would find each other. And I always thought I'd be completely reasonable and sensible about it. That I'd say, oh, how nice to meet you. Here, let me put you on the back of my motorcycle and we'll go to the ocean and I'll answer all your questions and we'll live happily ever after. Mm-hmm. That's what I thought. Mm-hmm. But when you found me, the top of my head blew off and I started pacing up and down the hallway of my house, holding on to my head, thinking, oh my God, it's my daughter.
One of the things, Lamar, that I really love about you is you never tried to take over anything. Because, you know, there was that fear, like I said, when she was younger, I thought, my God, if her mother comes along and tries to take her from me, even though legally it couldn't have happened, I had this concern. But you've always sort of stayed on your side of the fence. You didn't come into her life to be her mother.
Yeah.
You didn't come in her life to take over or to redo any of the teachings or any of the upbringing from her. And I've always told everybody, I think that's so admirable.
You were the mother. In my mind, you were the mother. You had done the mother work, and you were the mother, and I had the utmost respect for that. And I was just so happy to be included in your family.
And you are a family. And but I think that for me, that helped me so much.
Before I met you, the two of you, I had sort of talked myself into the idea that family didn't matter. Because my family had been harsh with me, and I had left them, and gone off to live my queer life. And I had just talked myself into the fact that family didn't matter. Then you showed up and suddenly family was all around me and in me. And I was elevated to a different level.
Mm-hmm.
I was connected to something that I had not been connected to.
I think myself that you actually showed up at the perfect time, wouldn't you say, Mom?
Oh,
she
yes.
got to skip all the turmoil.
I wish you had come during the teenage years, however. And maybe that's...
I probably wouldn't have been too good with that.
So you waited, and then, you know, the grandkids, and you showed up right at the perfect time.
Yeah, it's been great. Yeah. It's been great.
Mm-hmm. I'm just divinely blessed and grateful to have you both.
That was Lamar Van Dyke, Paula Lewis, and Tracy Lewis. Their story came to us from StoryCorps. It was facilitated by Geraldine Asu and produced by Chris Hambrick. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. And now it's time for Audiograph, the Bay Area's sonic signature. Here's KALW's Nina Gensler-Debs.
All week long, we've been playing you this sound.
That which makes harmony in the cosmos above bring peace within and between us.
This unique situation where peoples of different faiths will worship side by side is indeed a tribute to this great city.
Think you know what that was and where we recorded it? To tell you more, we sent KALW's Truk Nguyen to take a walk down one historic San Francisco street.
There's a road in South San Francisco that begins at Lake Merced where families stroll and ride bikes. Pigeons and seagulls sunbathe on the rocks, mallard ducks quack and paddle. As you head east on the street, the sound of birds are replaced by the whiz of cars. And you can start to see why this road is called Brotherhood Way. People zip past what is practically an entire neighborhood of religious institutions. There's a Masonic temple, a bilingual Armenian school, a Jewish day school, synagogue, Catholic, and Christian churches spread out on the mile-long road. Holy Trinity is the biggest building on Brotherhood Way. It's a Greek Orthodox church and can seat 900 people. Around 100 people sit listening to a Sunday morning service. Above them is a mosaic of the face of Christ that takes up the entirety of the church's 3,400 square foot dome and weighs as much as a fully loaded fire truck. I speak to churchgoer Mary Chicos after the service. She points to black and white photographs framed and mounted on the wall.
This is me, my mother-in-law,
And the girls are here, but nobody recognizes them because they all look alike.
Yeah, I think same. That's me. I'm not 100% sure, though. Here. Or maybe here.
And that's Maria Mistos, Mary Chicos' goddaughter. Maria's been coming to this church for 50 years, since she was 9.
We're all like a neighborhood. We know our fellow churches right next door, and we help one another.
Before it was home to all these religious institutions, and before it was even a road, Brotherhood Way was an arroyo, draining into Lake Merced. The land was largely undeveloped until a Catholic church called St. Thomas More bought a plot in 1951. At that time, the city sold parcels at a decreased rate to religious groups, groups like Congregation Beth Israel Judea. This is a Shabbat service at Beth Israel, where worshipers are welcomed with drums, tambourines, and singing. I speak to Rabbi Gottlieb after the service. He tells me that this synagogue sparked the idea to name the street Brotherhood Way.
Once it became a place of interfaith worship and gathering, the city fathers elders were persuaded to change the name to Brotherhood Way to reflect the ideals of our communities.
Gottlieb tells me there's a brotherhood association made up of religious leaders and members of various congregations.
Maybe quarterly, something like that, a few times a year to share what's going on in our communities. And there are a number of food festivals and other kinds of communal events that take place during the year on Brotherhood Way.
One of the bigger events that take place on Brotherhood Way is the annual Armenian Food Festival and Bazaar, hosted by the Calvary Armenian Congregational Church.
But inside the church, if you enter, as you see, we don't have too many statues and things like that. There's a simple Armenian cross in the pulpit.
That's Pastor Nurses Balabanian. His services feel a little more modern than, say, Holy Trinity, the Greek Orthodox Church. When he preaches, he points to PowerPoint slides with photos and words written in both English and Armenian. And in this particular sermon, Balabanian talks about selfies in a sermon about selfishness.
Selfies, it became a dictionary word, by the way. A photograph that one has taken...
Balabanian tells me that he prefers to really engage with his congregation instead of just speaking at them.
Sisterhood or brotherhood, I want to be inclusive, means... community means togetherness, people who come together, and we need that.
And not just in church, but across religions too. Rabbi Gottlieb agrees.
The name was changed to Brotherhood Way to acknowledge the peaceful coexistence of the various faith communities. And I think it stands as an example of how American society should be and could be.
When the city was first considering changing the street's name to Brotherhood Way, Sanford A. Marcus, a member of Congregation Beth Israel, wrote a letter to the San Francisco Chronicle.
This unique situation where peoples of different faiths will worship side by side is indeed a tribute to this great city where brotherhood of men has long been an established way of life.
Since then, Brotherhood Way has heard many languages and ways of worship.
At the same time, there is a time for collective prayer.
We are living in right side up in an upside down world.
Amen to that. For Cross Currents, I'm True Gwynn in San Francisco.
Thanks, Truk. And if you have a good idea for what might make a good audiograph sound, tell us. Give us a ring at 415-264-7106. That's 415-264-7106. We love hearing from you.
We do love hearing from you, and thanks for listening. Today's Cross Currents team includes Josiah Luis Alderete, Nina Gensler-Debs, Nicole Grigg, Chris Hoff, Olivia Henry, Angela Johnston,
Leela Day, Greer McVeigh, Lisa Morehouse, Stephen Short, Judy Silber, and Andrew Stelzer. Today's show was engineered by James Rollins, and the line producer was Liza Veal. Our managing editor is Jen Chien. Ben Trefney is our news director, and our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. Today's local music is by the 17-member San Francisco ensemble, the Electric Squeeze Box Orchestra. They'll be at Doc's Lab in San Francisco's North Beach this Sunday. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.